Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome, dear listeners. I'm Jonathan Carlin.
And I'm Benjamin Carlin.
And we invite you to join us through the Gryffindor, your one-way ticket to the enchanting world of Harry Potter. So grab your wands, dust off your broomsticks, and join us as we unlock the treasures behind Chamber of Secrets, Chapter 17, The Heir of Slytherin.
Shoot dang, dude. It's the climax chapter
of Book 2.
Pretty remarkable.
Great. Dude, yeah, we're so close to like the end of book two. I can't believe it.
And I just got to say, I feel like I came down hard on chapter 16 and all of like the sort of like coincidence based nature in which everything like unfolds.
Yeah.
And man, this is just a good chapter of Harry Potter.
Oh yeah. You don't have any coincidence problems in this one?
I have fewer coincidence based problems.
I have less coincidence based problems and more like Fox is so OP problems.
Fox is quite good.
Fox is quite good. Not even problems. Just like, boy, another solution.
Fox definitely charges in there and is essentially like the opposing puzzle piece to Tom Riddle's whole plan.
Yeah, like, basically.
Like somehow if there is an like antithesis to the King of Serpents, it's Fox.
Yeah, it's like, oh man, are you feeling scared? Don't worry, I'm going to sing a song and make you feel better. Oh, what? He can't. He's gonna kill you with his heat vision? Don't worry, I'm going to blind him. Oh, he stabbed you with his poison fangs? Don't worry, I can cure him. Oh, you're stuck down here? Don't worry, I can carry you out.
It really does feel like if this story were coming out in real time and I was an adult and reading this exact book, I would be all but certain that Dumbledore is supposed to be the great ancestor of Godric Gryffindor.
It really, really feels like it.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he's already sitting behind the Gryffindor.
Right.
You know, we're now fighting the heir of Slytherin. And Harry's whole thing is like, do I belong in Gryffindor? And it's like, yeah, obviously you do. You pulled the sword of Gryffindor.
Yes.
And like, I mean, Dumbledore, Gryffindor, like it's, I mean, it's...
It's even Godric's own sorting hat.
Yeah.
That, like, is brought down.
Sorting hat.
Sorting. Yeah, that's one of my all-time favorite things is like the I don't know if this was on purpose or just incredibly fortunate and lucky.
Yeah.
But like the fact that the sword comes in the hat and it's like the sorting hat, the sword is in the hat.
It's like that How I Met Your Mother joke where they're like, it's a ring bearer. Like, you're saying bear or bearer? A ring bearer.
A ring bearer. Yeah. He's like, what's going to happen? Yeah.
What is you better not bring a bear to my wedding.
No, that's exactly it. But yeah, you're right. There's sorting. a real Mad Gabs kind of nature to sorting hat and sword in hat.
Yeah.
And there happens to be a sword inside of the hat. So there you go.
Yeah. So there you go. Yeah. It's otherwise, I just love this whole chapter. Like, it is such a fun chapter. Chapter art, freaking awesome. So good.
It is really cool. It is really cool. He gets like some of the feathers in there, which like coming into the chapter, you would have no idea. It's like, why would there be feathers? But at the same rate, like because there's like the blood spatter and the feathers are just sort of there, it's almost the type of thing I think you could like not even notice that they are feathers.
Yeah, you're right. It sort of blends in. It's also sort of nice. This is like all of the chapter art is in black and white, and it's sort of, this is nice. It looks like blood, you're right, but it's like if it was in color, it'd be clearly black.
Oh, true.
Whereas like because it's not in color, you're like, is it blood?
Is it blood? The other thing I do think is kind of, I mean, this is not a critique. It's just, I think it's adorable, is the diary itself has got like a physical lock on it. It feels like a bit more like ornate than the diary that I picture, which is just like the one from like the films where it's just like a leather bound.
It doesn't seem like it would have a lock on it because like, then does Jenny have the key too?
Yeah, right, right.
I guess
you
could just magic it open it is a Muggle diary.
This feels more like Gilderoy Lockhart's diary. Lockhart. Yeah.
Right there.
Yep. So anyway, but yes, we can dive on into chapter 17, The Heir of Slytherin.
The Heir of Slytherin. All right. So we, in the last chapter, we have just entered Chamber of Secrets proper, where Harry is surrounded by towering stone pillars entwined with more carved serpents. I love to me, what is really funny about the appearance of the Chamber of Secrets is like the amount of time Salazar Slytherin spent decorating it.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. Like he had a vision.
He had a vision. He is like, you know what? I have a. It's not enough to have a secret room for my giant pet snake. I need to snake this place out.
It's like, I imagine, you know, like they're like, you know, there's like the montage scene and like the castle's being built and there's people walking by with like rafters on their shoulders and everything. And, you know, Godric walks over to Salazar, who's looking at like an easel with information on the easel. And Godric's like, you know, Salazar, what are you up to? And he's like, well, it's my mood board. And, you know, it's like, mood board for what? It's like, well, my Chamber of Secrets, obviously.
You're going to have a secret hideout?
Yeah, I'm going to do that too.
Yeah.
What a great idea. Yeah. It's like, what do you got on here? And like, you know, Godric looks closer at the easel and it's just snakes.
Yeah,
like it's like snakes everywhere. And right. he's like Sal, this is, I mean, I see what you're going for. You clearly have like a decision made about what your space will look
direction
like.
Here. It's like, it's what the Basilisk will live there, of course. It's
right.
Like,
well, right.
I want him to feel at home. He's going to be lonely. You know, we can't go visit him very much. We can't bring him into the school.
Exactly. Then he looks at like, you know, Gryffindor or Godric, and he's like, you know, what are you thinking for yours? And Godric's like, well, get this. I'm thinking I'll have a, you know, like, you know how my last name is Gryffindor, right? So I'm going to have a griffin shaped knocker on my door. And Salazar's like, crap, right. That's like, pretty good.
That's amazing. Yeah. I'm putting snakes on my door.
I'm putting snakes on my door.
He's like, it's all a game of one-upsmanship, you know.
It is, yes.
Right, because, again, like, I know you're like, wait, why would they be talking about the Chamber of Secrets? Because, obviously, at the beginning, they all knew about the Chamber, and then he conceals it, Fidelius Charm style,
yeah. and then stores the information about how to access it into Slytherin's locket, which is, like, you know, its unique
and
power.
And then all the other founders are like, wasn't there, there was, like, a basement. Something in it. What? Oh my God. What is in it?
Magic has got to be so infuriating because it could even be the type of thing where like they're like reaching for the information and they're like, he Fidelius'd it.
That'd be so frustrating.
Right, right.
Like he did it. Sly dog.
That's the thing. I mean, and I know it sounds silly and ridiculous, but like partially I love that because I think a lot of Harry Potter is silly and ridiculous. But like whenever me and you talk about the founders, I feel like we are so aware that like the fracture in the friendship between these four does not happen until the end of the story.
Right. Yes.
So it's like they are otherwise best friends.
Yes. Like that is the thing. Like you've got, when you think about the founders, you like must remember like the four of them are like best friends. Like honestly, they're not like constantly bickering. They're not constantly like Slytherin sort of at odds. Like they are all hanging out, doing important, like they are four good guys hanging out.
Yes, exactly.
And then something happens.
And then something happens.
Yes.
Yeah, which you know, it's a story for a different day, I think. But in the meantime, though, as we get into the chamber, there's a couple of notes that I think are kind of interesting about it or things we can discuss. The greenish gloom that fills the space almost certainly means they're beneath the lake.
Yeah.
Because the Slytherin common room has the same kind of like green tinted windows, which I think is just not as deep.
Yeah.
So like maybe the gloom is coming from the fact that like light is barely making its way you know, through so much of the surface,
yeah,
that like all you're getting is just like a little bit of ambient light that's like funneling through. So I think at some point in time they said they were like miles beneath the school. It's just not possible. They can't be miles.
I mean, you can't get but so deep into the earth anyway. I do. So this is like I think Chamber of Secrets is like up there for one of my favorite movies from Harry Potter. But like there is a great scene in this particular one where like as Harry's walking down, they have all those snake heads along like the big hallway or whatever.
Yes.
Like there's a great scene where the basilisk is slithering like between them straight at the camera.
Yeah.
And it's like you probably don't notice it, but like at the beginning of Deathly Hallows, then there is the same scene happening at Malfoy Manor where Nagini is slithering on the table.
Right.
But all the snakes have been replaced by the Death Eaters.
Oh.
And the head of Slytherin has been replaced by Voldemort.
Oh,
like, it's the same scene. Good. It is such a good like overlay. It's like such an illusion back, and it's like yeah, I love that one.
No, that is super good. That is super good. The other thing is that like, and I know that this has always been like a little bit of a reach for us, but there is the other big detail is there's the statue of Salazar Slytherin himself.
Yeah,
and I think it's described as quite a large statue.
Quite a large statue. Had to crane his neck to look up into the giant face above.
Yeah. So it's really, really big.
Yeah.
At one point in time, I think we possibly like tugged on the thread of the possibility that like Salazar Slytherin himself like is alive in the chamber and he used the basilisk to petrify himself.
Right.
And the statue is not a statue. It's him.
And he's just petrified.
He's been petrified. So it'd be like, I mean, it's sort of amazing because, or at least if you wanted like a plot for like a future Harry Potter story, would almost be the world where it's like, Voldemort is gone. The world has been rid of evil. And then like you cut to the Chamber of Secrets and like the green eyes flash open and you're like,
right.
What the heck? It's like this is a 1,000 year old. It's like, you know, we've been dealing with Slytherin's heir. This is Salazar Slytherin.
Right.
He never left. You know, it's like, which, I mean, it's an, unfortunately, the statue is just absolutely like comically gigantic, which is the other thing that I feel like Godric would have given him so much crap for.
Oh, I know.
It's like, it's a little.
It's a little big.
It's a little of your nose.
It's a little big. I like how you exposed your toes as well.
Yeah.
Like I like for you went for barefoot. That was nice.
It's a choice.
Or open-toed shoes. You know, whatever.
Whatever. We're deep in a basement. You know, there could be hazards. Probably not OSHA approved. Otherwise, his face is described as ancient and monkey.
No, I think he's barefoot. He made the statue of himself barefoot. It says two enormous gray feet stood on the smooth chamber floor and later it describes his large toes. So he makes this giant statue of himself barefoot.
Barefoot.
There you go. Okay. All the more reason it's not really a statue. That seems like a weird design choice.
It does seem like a weird choice.
Here's what happened. He was like, there's commotion above. Things are collapsing. You know, things are about to crumble. And he's like, we have to hold it up. It's like, we can't make anything that big that'll hold it. And he's like, I have an idea. Basilisk that is going to petrify me. Godric, you and Gorgio, me. I'll hold it up. I'll know exactly where to go.
So it's like a very like Atlas holding up the sky.
Yeah. He's literally holding it up, you know?
Yeah. Okay. So that's what actually happened here is that Salazar Slytherin has been made into a massive
statue,
gigantic statue. And it's just the actual petrified version of Salazar Slytherin.
Exactly.
People are like, okay, this podcast started out good with like lots of excellent commentary. At some point in time, these guys clearly went off the rails.
Even if the statue is probably not him, but I love the idea that somewhere, maybe Harry just didn't see it. There is a more regular size statue of him as well. That is just him.
Well, the thing that I think is the most vital to this story that seems shocking that it is absent in any way, shape, or form is the absolute emphasis on the heir of Slytherin's existence and zero reference at any point in time to Salazar Slytherin having like a potential partner of sorts that could have created the first heir.
Right.
You know, and it's like, it's that to me has always brought me back to the narrative for a founder series that would revolve around like Slytherin having a witch who was his wife or love interest and the like non-magic populace result in her death.
Right.
And it's like, that's the point where he is like, like Salazar never had issue with the non-magical community. He has only come to recognize their danger through his own personal heartbreak. And he's like, I think what we need to do is keep magic to people who are magic, because people who don't understand magic are not going to be like open-minded
right.
to it. Like, and it's a danger to us.
Exactly.
So it's not this superiority complex that like Voldemort inherits and believes was his intention.
Right. Like through the lens of like the 1990s, when they're looking back, they're like, why, what's that? So that's ridiculous. But like you can arrange the show such that like the Muggle population around them is like truly dangerous and hateful.
I mean, yeah. You know, like we know historically there, right. like in the actual history that there were like witch trials.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's not a complete leap to right. see a world where something that people don't understand
and
is
their existence that, would predate the Statute of Secrecy.
It would, yes, yeah. by like centuries.
Yeah, centuries. So yeah, yeah. Who knows? I'm always like Slytherin's story is so interesting to me because it's like it's sort of shrouded in mystery. It's very clearly hinted that he's like evil, but like you just don't really know what happened.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
like even the founding of the school, I don't even know what date it was. Somehow,
I know. Yeah, yeah. There's so many like unusual things that date back to this particular time. The other thing that we learned about in this particular chapter that I'm deadly curious about is Tom Riddle refers to the founders, and I think he's the only person who ever does this, as like the Hogwarts Four.
Yeah,
which is kind of like, you know, like we always call them the founders, but like the Hogwarts Four must have been like, or could have been how the founders were known to the populace at that point in time.
Oh, so
like,
sure.
Like Tom Riddle's research has like almost like uncovered how they were referred to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or maybe do you think the Basilisk calls on that, the Hogwarts Four?
It could be.
Tom's just talking to the Basilisk and he's like, how, what was it like? And he's like, well, the Hogwarts Four, Tom's.
Yeah. I love the little
didn't have any S's in that sentence.
Just got to add an obligatory
Hogwarts.
I'm a snake. Which, by the way, this is jumping ahead so far for no reason because it's otherwise a very small detail. But one of the things I did love is when they shut the door or when Harry is like defeated the Basilisk and they're leaving, it says Harry heard the stone doors close behind them with a soft hiss. And I'm like, oh my God, that's so perfect. It's just like
with a soft hiss.
Just a little like, soft hiss.
You know, Salazar's blagger is like, Godric, come here. Listen to this. Ready? Close. And he's like, like, oh, did you make it hiss?
That's a good touch. It fits your snake theming so well.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Very good. Very good. Anyway, let's actually talk about
the book and not our
theories that Salazar Slytherin lives as a petrified statue of himself in the Chamber of Secrets.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Which clearly he does.
Right.
You know, that would be so like the thing that I'm going to get sidetracked again. Like it's fun to me. Like if you're doing a founder series to show like the other side of Slytherin and that like Voldemort's like entire, because to me, if Slytherin's a good guy, then Voldemort's that much worse of a bad guy.
Yes.
Because as entire platform is based on his belief that his ancestor wanted this done, which isn't even true. So yes. He's just evil for literally no reason.
Yeah, no, absolutely. To me, this is the thing, like where if Slytherin could arise and appear to Voldemort, he'd be like, dude, not what I meant.
Not what
at
I meant.
All. This is not the goal.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
You know, and Tom Riddle would then just sort of be like, yeah, but it works for me. So I've twisted your words in a way that
right.
I'm going to run with it.
I didn't want the Muggles to come here because they were killing us. We're not better than them.
Right. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Like, yeah. So that's the thing. It's like the blood purity is where the like confusion arises from.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to give away all of our ideas in case.
I know,
don't say it all. Believe me, we could go on. Anyway, let's see. Harry goes in there. He finds Ginny and Tom Riddle emerges just leaning against the wall, you know, which is like, are you just chilling, waiting for like the download to finish over there? How long has he just been leaning against this wall like, here we go, Ginny. I'm gonna be alive soon.
Dude, this is like one of those where like it's like you'd love to imagine like Tom Riddle's just in this basement in the darkness, the green glow, by himself, and he's like, He's like kind of like twiddling his fingers, and he's like, okay, like when he comes down here, I'm going to need to like, where's a good shadow? I can like tuck myself into. I got to look kind of cool.
I know, because like, he goes on to reveal, he's like, I think we were complaining in the last chapter, like, why did you write on the wall, dude? Like, you could have just taken her down there and come back, no problem. Like, why did you write on the wall? And he's like, I wrote on the wall to lure Harry Potter down here. It's like, oh, you intended this.
It wasn't a mistake,
right.
I see.
But you're right. It does mean that he was down there. He's like, where should I stand?
Right.
Or should I be like waiting for him in the middle, like, hey, welcome, Harry? Or I'm going to be in the shadows.
Yeah. Right. Yes.
Yeah.
Where does he say it? Because I'm afraid I'm jumping ahead a little bit here, but there is the line where he specifically says, let's see here. I've been waiting for you to appear since we arrived here. I knew you'd come.
Yeah.
And this is like really one of those things that I find to be kind of fascinating, because it's like Tom Riddle does feel like he's got Harry Potter's number in a way that he's like, I know how you're going to, like, I know you're predictable, because this is exactly what Voldemort is lamenting in Deathly Hallows when he basically tells Harry through his mega speaker voice to the whole castle.
Yeah.
He's like, you have 1 hour to arrive in the forest. And then Harry arrives in the forest under an invisibility cloak. And Voldemort is basically saying like, I thought he'd come. I knew he'd come.
Right.
Like, you know, he's like, how did I misread the situation? And sure enough, Harry is in fact there.
Yeah.
But I was like, man, that's such a crazy, like this is the same line as he will eventually say in Deathly Hallows.
But there's also a great reverse of that, where Harry is talking to, or Ron is talking to Harry at one point, because they have some idea about what he's going to do, and Harry's all like, no, he won't do that. And he has this like, I can't remember the exact thing. He has this like amazing, like insightful reason for why Voldemort won't do what Ron suggested. And he's like, wow, you really understand him, don't you? And he's like, parts of him.
Yeah. It's like, whoa, that's heavy.
Yeah, it's like, I know. It's like, it is like a really cool scene where Ron is just like so impressed by the way Harry understands Voldemort. So like they really see each other.
Harry's confidence does come out in such like such drips.
Yeah.
But when it does come out, it's like, man, okay, all right.
Let's go.
Go Harry. Yeah, yeah. He's always so brave. Go Harry.
Go Harry. Go Harry. All right. So Tom Riddle emerges. Harry does not immediately figure out that he's the bad guy. He's still like, Tom, you've got to help me. Here we go. This is interesting. There's like a little thing here where I guess like Harry reaches down to try and like lift Ginny up, or like hoist her up or whatever. Let's see. Yeah, he says Riddle didn't move. Harry, sweating, managed to hoist Ginny half off the floor and bent to pick up his wand again, but his wand was gone. So it's like without moving, he like summons the, like, does he like wandless magic it to himself?
That's a good question.
It like specifically says Riddle didn't move, his wand was gone. Right?
So it's like, you're right.
The memory is like,
I think that's maybe like just a tiny little like situational error.
Yeah, it does sound like, yeah.
Because it does seem like, the film depicts it in a way that just makes perfect logical sense, which is that like Harry immediately sees Ginny on the ground, assumes danger is afoot, has no idea that Tom is the one causing the danger, drops his wand, runs over to Ginny, and Tom Riddle just sort of like picks it up.
Yeah, picks it up. Yeah, it looks totally normal.
Right.
But I was like, is he doing magic right now? That's, as a memory, can he do it?
I guess he can. I mean, because he does. I mean, he writes his name in the air with Harry's wand.
That's true. You're right. So he can absolutely do it.
The thing about the wand in particular is that, I mean, he like it has the fox phoenix.
The fox feather in it.
Feather, yeah, which only has like one other, which is Voldemort's own. So it stands to reason that Voldemort would have zero issues using Harry's wand.
You would think so, because you'd think the core would have more to say about it than like the wood.
You would, yeah. You'd believe that,
or right?
I would think that at least.
Okay, so here's like a random thought. So I thought this, because I wrote down things. So it was like, would their wands work well for each other? And it's like, it doesn't look like Tom has any problem using Harry's wand. Not that he tries to do very much with it. But like Harry like takes his wand to Ollivander and is like, I can't fix this. But it's like the feather is still there and the feather is still intact. So it's like if he extracted the core and just like put that feather in a different Hollywood, you know, wand,
right,
would it effectively be the same?
I mean, I don't know. It seems more like one of those things where like there's so much melding that's happening between all the ingredients, where one of those ingredients is the wizard itself. So there's the core, the wood, and then the wizard, and they're all like learning from each other as
that's
they go.
True. Yeah.
So I think it would be like, it might, it, there's a chance that it would make a more functioning wand than what Harry is left with. Even if he still had Holly.
Well, yeah. Okay. So then maybe it wouldn't be as good as the one it was broken from, but what do you think that would like, basically be like him getting his original wand again, almost.
Maybe?
Or,
maybe.
Yeah.
I guess it depends on how badly broken the feather is, if it is at all.
Right. Or is it like, no, I was in a wand and then that wand broke, so now this is just broken.
It's just broken.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's sort of the way that I read it, because the lack of repairability to the wands is actually a piece of the canon I'm pretty obsessed with, because it's so, like, it's so rigid as a rule that it makes the power of the Elder Wand being able to do something that, like, within magic, like if a teapot falls off or like a teacup or whatever falls off and lands on the ground, you can just repair it back to a perfectly good working order. No big deal. Like, it's such an easy solve in magic. But like with wands in particular, it's like, no. Once it's been broken, that's it.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that would be my thought. Obviously, we're jumping ahead a lot too.
Yeah, we are.
Deathly Hallows. But either way, I'm going back to Harry picking up Ginny. That was like one of those things where I'm like, man, way to go, Harry. Like, been doing some some squats.
Oh, I know. Because, right? Yeah, he's only 1 year older than her.
Right. Yeah. Lifting somebody off the ground who is like in dead weight mode is so difficult.
It is hard. Yeah.
Not that I'm speaking from a huge amount of experience or anything, but I've carried some sandbags.
Well, it says he only manages to hoist her half off the floor.
Okay. There we go.
So yeah. It's like, maybe you should have tried to magic her off the floor, Harry.
Right. Right. Well, he already left his wand.
Already left his wand. There you go.
Through the Gryffindor is sponsored by Shopify. Okay. So story time. Since the day that I met my wife, Alice, she has been all about secondhand clothing. So 2 years ago, we decided to take that idea and run with it and open a business called Nude. It's like the past tense of new, because it's not really old, but you know, nude. Old is the new nude. You get it. Anyway, we'd both been in business, but she was hung up on how to start selling online. But fortunately, I had experience with Shopify, and to tell you that we got started in no time is a straight up understatement. We were busy being brand new parents to a 6 month old. We both have other jobs, and within 2 weeks of idea conception, we had the website up and running. So if you're on the fence, whether it's in the like launch your online shop stage, do the first real store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million order stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Plus, even if you do have questions, Shopify's award-winning help is there to help support your success every step of the way. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/griffin. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/griffin now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/griffin.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
Anyway, let's see. Harry takes a startlingly long time to realize that Tom is the bad guy, because he says, we've got to go if the basilisk comes. He goes, it won't come until it's called, said Riddle calmly. And it's like, even now, it's like, oh, he's not surprised by the basilisk information. He already knows about it and knows how it responds. Yeah, still probably trustworthy.
This is the thing where it's like, I like to think that Harry would just see the good in everybody before the bad. Like, it's like, this is kind of one of those things where it's like, if you assume everybody is suspicious, it's not a very good way to live your life. But Harry, as somebody who has a lot of like natural instincts as an Auror, I like the idea that he still assumes the best first.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, me too.
I think that probably means that he would be good at his job and like more thoughtful about how he approached it. So
right.
I like that.
Yeah, let's see. So eventually, though, says Harry stared at him. There was something funny going on here. He starts to catch on, and Tom starts monologuing his entire... It's quite a long story. But I got time. I'm waiting for this download bar to finish. Let's go.
It's no big deal. We You'll can do this. Dead. I can do this all day.
Yeah, yeah. I'll just tell you everything that happened because it's the end of the book, so let's go.
Yep.
I suppose the real reason Ginny Weasley's like this is because she opened her heart and spilled all her secrets to an invisible stranger, which is like, I was like, man, you know, it doesn't not sound like he catfished her a little, you know?
You're right. You're yeah. right. Yep. Yep. No, I can totally see that.
Yep.
Just definitely like, I mean, that is really what happened.
Yeah.
You know,
you're just sort of talking to someone online. You're like, I don't know who you are, but I guess I'll just keep talking to you.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. We will do like a really like modern version of Harry Potter, like 100 years from now.
And right.
It's like Ginny's on like AOL Instant Messenger.
Right.
Messaging Tom Riddle.
Yeah. That's how long it takes wizards to get the internet.
Yeah, who's like actively like uploading a virus.
Yeah, exactly. Like into her through the screen.
Yeah.
That's the magic part of it.
The interesting thing to me though is is basically what Ginny has been writing in the diary for months. Like you could certainly assume that there'd be a world where she talked about Harry a little bit because she certainly seems to have feelings for him basically from the beginning. She also says how her brothers tease her, which is like one of those things where it's like, this is not something that I tend to think of, or I can't imagine it lasts very long once Ginny gets to school. Like she doesn't seem like she is on the receiving end of being teased past year one.
Right. Yeah. You
know, she's just too capable. She's too good. She's too popular.
Right.
Too well-liked. It's like, what's there to tease?
I know. Exactly. Meanwhile, there's Percy. His younger brothers are teasing him.
Yes. Yeah.
Endlessly. Yeah. That's funny. I love how there's a bunch of hints to like Ginny and Harry sort of like, or like Ginny liking Harry. Even right here, it says she didn't think the famous, good, great Harry Potter would ever like her. And it's like, does he mean like just like her at all, or like her, you know?
I think probably like her, like her.
Yeah, like romantically.
Like romantically.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they like, we know that they will eventually get married. So yeah, it's like, so, you know, normally I wouldn't weigh in on such things, but it's like they've just been, it basically just means she knew from the beginning.
Yeah.
She always like, knew.
Oh yeah. This is the guy. Let's see. So Riddle starts revealing more and more of his plan. He has this high, cold laugh. Let's see. I love his line here. If I say so myself, Harry, I've always been able to charm the people I needed. And it's like, yep, that is true. That is like his main characteristic growing up.
It really is. I mean, this is definitely like a big one where it's amazing how quickly Tom went from who he was at the orphanage, where he was using there's no reason why there's no obvious reason why he wouldn't also have just been using charm to elevate his position at the orphanage.
Right.
But for whatever reason, he seems to just have this like inherent for, like value for magic that like within the world of Hogwarts, he never like he wants to be seen in a completely different light
right.
than like what he's ever done. For his whole life.
Yeah.
All he's ever known.
Well, it's like, to me, it's like he knows what he wants. And he's like, if the way to get that is by simply being polite, then that's how I'll do it.
Right.
You know, like whatever the path forward is, I'll take that path because at the end of the day, it will get me what I want.
Right.
But it's like, I will only ever appear polite, even though clearly not.
Clearly not.
No,
there you go.
Perhaps the more important line, though, is, so Ginny poured out her soul to me, and her soul happened to be exactly what I wanted. Then if you skip down, it says, feeding Miss Weasley a few of my secrets to start pouring a little of my soul back into her. So this is starting to get into like your first like Horcrux talk.
Yeah. And again, you know, like this is an interesting one where I've had to backpedal a lot because I've historically been a little bit skeptical that the diary was intended to be a Horcrux as of the writing of Chamber of Secrets.
Yeah.
And I do feel like there's a lot more basis for it, like kind of going back and combing through each sentence like we're doing right now, where it's like, yeah, no, it does seem like the diary is using like its primary magic seems to be soul centric.
Yeah,
you know, so it's hard to argue with what it's, you know, doing as a potential Horcrux.
Yeah, like I think it probably was always intended to be a Horcrux. I think it is possible that maybe like the full idea of what a Horcrux is wasn't like entirely like fleshed out, perhaps, or like what they'd be capable of, or
you mean from a writing perspective?
From a writing
not
perspective.
From Tom Riddle's.
Not from Tom Riddle, yeah, okay. Clearly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, because we just spent a lot of time last week delving into a theory, basically discussing the prospect that the way in which, and I'm trying to remember if we talked about it on Gryffindor or not, but the primary way in which Tom Riddle most likely found the Chamber of Secrets in this year in particular is because he first went to the Gaunt Shack where they had previously owned Salazar Slytherin's locket, and they could speak Parcel Tongues. So similar to like how Harry eventually is able to speak to the locket to open it so that Ron can destroy it, like the Gaunts would have been able to do that. They would have the instructions to the Chamber of Secrets, which is just the theory that we've always had,
right,
is what the locket was intended to do. So our thinking here is that Tom Riddle has already made the ring Horcrux.
Yes.
And in making the ring Horcrux is how he found the Chamber of Secrets. And then once he's in the Chamber of Secrets, it ultimately creates the diary as a secondary Horcrux as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So the interesting thing is that it does mention, like it says he was twirling Harry's wand between his fingers. So like Harry notices like his hands, but it doesn't, there's no mention of the ring here, which is almost surprising. You'd think he'd be wearing it.
You would
at this point.
Yeah,
but
I do agree with you. That's a detail that I almost feel like I could let pass because, like, it's because we the reader don't have any reason to know what it means
right
yet either. But like, just because it's not described doesn't mean it's not there.
Doesn't mean it's not there. Yeah. Also, doesn't mean he couldn't have like hidden it already.
Also true. Yeah. Also true, because we do know that he doesn't keep the ring with him. He is wearing it at school at least for a period of time, at least through Slughorn's memory. But so it's I can see where it might seem like a little flimsy to just lean on, be like, just because it says it's not there, like I can get that argument, but I don't feel lost by that detail either.
Me neither. All right. Well, just wanted to bring it up in case we had some descent.
Yes, you know, absolutely.
Down there. Also, I think earlier in the book, we were wondering whether or not the words on the wall were up there in paint or blood. We get clarification that it was paint.
I highlighted that as well, because I was like, part of me thinks it's blood, but is it paint?
Yeah.
It's paint.
It is paint.
It's paint. There we go.
Yeah, it feels like it would have been better if it was blood.
Pretty intense.
I know.
Whose blood would it have been?
Whose blood? Who knows? Yeah, that probably would have given it away if Ginny's just like slashing her hands open to write on the wall.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely I highlighted the next line because that piece of information comes basically as Tom is sort of like mocking Ginny's diary entries, where it's like, I've got paint all down my front. Dear Tom, Percy keeps telling me I'm pale and I'm not myself. I think he suspects me. There was another attack today and I don't know where I was, Tom. What am I doing? I think I'm going mad. I think I'm the one attacking everyone, Tom. This is terrifying to think about.
Yeah.
Like there being something like disastrous that happens like in your proximity and then somehow realizing that you could be responsible for it.
Yeah, but like you keep blacking out.
Right. Yeah. It's like I don't know what's happening. It's like it's a very Jekyll and Hyde kind of vibes.
Oh yes.
You know, it's like I don't realize that I am a danger when I'm like, you know, in those blackout phases.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like, I mean, Ginny would obviously not normally hurt anyone ever. And this is like the realization, like, you know, dawning over her. So it's like, I could imagine how scary that would be to be enduring by yourself, especially because who do you tell?
Yeah. Yes. It does sound really terrifying.
Yeah.
Let's see. Then Harry goes on. I love he's still being so trusting, even as Tom's telling all this. Is, I thought you made a mistake, but you framed Hagrid, didn't you? And it's like, yeah, get there, Harry.
Riddle laughed his high laugh again.
Hear me out.
Yeah, this is really funny. Mostly, I was highlighting these little bits because there is a Voldemort laughing scene in Deathly Hallows Part 2. I think it's maybe like when Neville steps forward and starts like, you know, basically saying like, it's okay if Harry's gone because we're still here and we're still fighting. And Voldemort lets out this just absolutely hilarious, like. And we use it in videos so often
all
because all of us in office get a massive kick out of it.
It is hilarious. Yeah.
Every time he did the laughed his high laugh again, I kept playing.
I know. And it's like the funny thing is like his like high cold laughter is brought up over and over in the books, and he never laughs in the movies. But like there is that one scene where he laughs like a complete clown, and it's like super famous.
It's super famous because it's not like a very high cold laugh at all.
And it's not. It's just like. Anyway, he says some things about Hagrid, that he's in trouble every other week trying to raise werewolf cubs under his bed, sneaking off to the Forbidden Forest to wrestle trolls. And I was like, well, now wait a minute. We talked about the werewolf thing a few times, how there's like if two werewolves mate while they're a werewolf, the resulting offspring will be like really smart wolves or something. Like, are we to believe that Hagrid has found some of these really smart wolves and is raising them? Because that's really the only way you have werewolf cubs.
You're right. Like that's basically the only scenario. At which point they're not werewolf cubs. They're just wolves.
Yes. They're cubs of a werewolf.
Right.
Right.
And the idea that he would be raising them under his bed is it's so outlandish to even consider. It's like surely this is like hyperbole.
It's gotta be. It's like, because also like on the wrestling trolls is like, I don't think there are trolls in the forest.
No. Yeah. I don't. Yeah. I mean, well, I guess the troll in the dungeon had to come from somewhere with Quirrell.
I guess they just never run into them ever again.
They do never run into them. Yeah. So I mean,
I don't know. I guess like in Hogwarts Legacy, you can come across some forest trolls, but they're always like in like encampments. It always seems like someone brought them there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, I don't know. It's not a hill I would die on or anything like that.
Yeah, but me neither.
It's just clearly like, you know, I don't know. Even like Hagrid being in trouble every other week, to me, this speaks more to like the possibility of like there being like a little bit of like Hagrid being maybe targeted a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
You know, because it does even seem like basically what Tom Riddle is saying, like, look how clean cut I was. I was a prefect. I was doing good in all my classes. And then there's Hagrid.
Right.
Okay, man.
Not so good. But then he even says, even I was surprised how well the plan worked. I thought someone must realize that Hagrid couldn't possibly be the heir of Slytherin, which to me, we also have another theory that Hagrid was in Slytherin in school.
Right.
Right. And it's like, to me, this is more proof that he was, because it's like, you're right. Like if he wasn't in Slytherin, why would people think he was the heir of Slytherin?
I know. I mean, and maybe the only basis for that is that like Harry speaking to snakes basically led everybody to believe that he was also the heir of Slytherin.
Right.
You know, despite the fact that he's in Gryffindor.
Yeah.
And really the thing that like sort of like is giving any credence to that thought as a reader as well is that like we know what the Sorting Hat said to Harry beforehand and considered Slytherin.
Yeah.
And so it's like, well, you know, they did think that.
They did think that, but Harry also has this like side relationship with Voldemort that he's already famous for.
True.
You know?
True. Yeah.
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 Meanwhile, otherwise, also, how does Tom Riddle know what Hagrid's keeping under his bed, you know?
I know.
Well, the Sharon dorms is how.
Yeah.
Slytherin common room.
And again, we go back to that flashback from before. Like, they clearly know each other by name.
By name.
You know, which, I mean, to be fair, I mean, Hagrid probably does, you know, stand out enough to where it might be easy to, like, recognize him from, like, across the quad or something. But and then Tom Riddle is a prefect, so he also may have enough, like, notoriety surrounding him that would be also possible.
But, also possible, but still, I still don't love the... It seems impossible to me that Hagrid is raising Aragog in, like, the dungeons in the castle and having to care for him all the time and sneak out of Gryffindor Tower and successfully make it to the dungeons, like, on a nearly nightly basis.
Yeah, especially if you're going to be, like, regarding a young Hagrid as Tom Riddle describes him as big, blundering Hagrid.
Yeah.
It's like, it doesn't exactly sound like someone who's going to have excellent stealth skills.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
When Harry's halfway getting caught all the time and he's got an invisibility cloak and is quite, you know, like, small in stature.
He's the youngest seeker in a century.
Exactly.
Just the build for a seeker.
Right, right.
Yeah. Anyway, Hagrid was in Slytherin, probably.
We do also get the bit of information here that I think kind of adds additional thought to our theory that the ring comes first, which is just the very next sentence where you had stopped off, where it says, it had taken me 5 whole years to find out everything I could about the Chamber of Secrets and discover the secret entrance, which means that basically, like, he had been looking for quite some time, which... pairing that with his, like, you know, obsession with his own lineage,
yeah,
I think could very easily, you know, be like how he partially, like, what drives him to the Gaunts.
Because right.
When he gets to the Gaunts, he does not know that Tom Riddle Sr. lives up the hill.
Right.
Morphin has to tell him that information.
Yes. Yeah.
So that's like one of those where it's like he didn't go looking for his father. He went looking for the Gaunts.
Right.
You know, so.
Yes. Yeah. So, and it's like, if he's been looking for it for 4 years, then it even stands to reason that, like, when he is questioning Morphin in, like, you know, the scenes we don't see, that, like, he is like, do you know about the Chamber of Secrets? Because I've been looking.
Right. And we know, yeah, from the Pottermore archives that the Gaunts do know about the, yes, Chamber of Secrets, because they are the ones responsible for basically reconstructing the girls' bathroom over top of the entrance.
Yes. Which was a trap door. Like, how did no one find it?
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Right. Just a trap door.
The Fidelius charm.
Fidelius charm.
You can't
no
see
one
it.
Can see it. Yeah.
It's just like it's the Potter's house.
It continues to make sense to me that this is what the locket is hiding, is the Chamber of Secrets information.
It definitely, I mean, the fact that it's a locket in general, again, yeah, going back, and this is the other thing, like I said earlier, like, why are we not more preoccupied about Slytherin's, like, you know, love life when his heir is so important? His key artifact is a locket.
I know. Typically you think of lockets as like where you keep a picture of like your wife or something.
Which probably he did.
Probably he did.
Up until her potential death, and therefore his turning on everything and the, mm-hmm, creation of the Chamber of Secrets. See, it all fits together,
it
guys.
All
it
all fits together. It fits together.
HBO, if you want to call us, just anytime.
Anytime you want. I got some. We will write you the best Founder series. People will forget about Fantastic Beasts. It'll be great.
It'll be great.
It'll be great.
Anyway.
We'll do it.
Next thing I really love here, though, is the basically Harry immediately putting, like, you know, all, like, his allegiance to Dumbledore is amazing, which is just, I bet Dumbledore saw right through you, said Harry with his teeth gritted. I do love this, that, you know, Harry, who has just failed for the last three pages to realize that this person who, yeah, happens to be in the chamber with his dying friend is the person responsible.
Yeah.
He's immediately like, yeah, but Dumbledore probably had your number, even if it took me a few pages to get there.
Right. Yeah. Dumbledore gets a little faster.
I do love that, though.
Yeah. Good
Dumbledore.
Yep.
Let's see here. Then we've got the next line here, which is more information about the Diary Horcrux itself, which is that Tom Riddle did always intend for it to be more offensive in nature versus, yeah, defensive, where he says, I decided to leave behind a diary preserving my 16-year-old self in its pages so that one day, with luck, I would be able to lead another in my footsteps and finish Salazar Slytherin's noble work.
So, what you think his work was.
Well, yeah, exactly. I disagree, Tom, with your premise. But, yeah. But, I mean, that right there is absolute proof, because Horcruxes in general are not meant to do what this one is doing.
Yeah.
Like, this is even like a big misconception about Horcruxes across the board, which is that the soul inside of, like, you know, Hufflepuff's cup could have also come back to life, so to speak. It's like what they're doing is tethering what we always refer to as Voldemort Prime to the living. So it's like Voldemort himself, like, even in the Potter's house, like, when the spell backfired, like, what prevented him, it's like he ran into, like, an invisible wall.
Yeah.
Which would be passing over to death. Like, his soul cannot pass through the wall.
Right.
Because the Horcruxes exist.
Right.
But it's not like once the thing backfired, that piece of soul was gone, and now one of the other Horcruxes needed to spring into action.
Right, and, like, come back to life.
Right, which, right, is additionally important, because the question does arise, like, does that then mean that it would be possible for there to be two Voldemorts at the same time between Voldemort Prime, again, as we refer to him, and Riddle Diary Voldemort? And the answer to that question almost has to be yes.
It is. I think the answer is yes, it is possible, but Riddle Diary only even acts because he knows that Voldemort Prime, it has been taken down.
Right. Right. Yes. So, yes.
Like, so otherwise he just says it. His goal with the diary is to lead someone else to finish the work.
Right.
Like, he doesn't intend, like, his intent with the diary is that someone else will get it and he'll tell them how to use it.
Right.
Not that someone else will get it and I will take over their body and become a person and then do it myself.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess he's only trying to become a person because he believes that he otherwise failed.
Right.
And, I mean, also, to be fair on that note, it might mean that Riddle Diary would believe the ring had already been destroyed, and Riddle Diary also doesn't know everything else that happens after age 16.
Yeah.
Ginny has to inform him as to the fact that Harry Potter basically led to his own eventual future downfall.
Right.
So the only reason that Riddle Diary knows anything about what happened is because Ginny told him,
right,
not because he's otherwise informed.
Yes. So he's under, like, Riddle Diary, when Ginny starts, must be under the impression that Voldemort is still out there.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
At least at first.
At least at first.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's also, this is just more just piling onto our idea that this was the second Horcrux and not the first, is that it says there was an odd red gleam in his hungry eyes now, which to me is like, if 16-year-old Tom Riddle has the red gleam in his eyes, like the red gleam, all of the transformation stuff is because he makes the Horcruxes.
Yeah.
So like the gleam is part of the reason he has the red eyes is because of this. So it's like the ring, he already made the ring, which is why 16-year-old Tom has the red gleam
going. Just a little bit.
It's not as intense.
I know that like when he goes to visit Hepzibah Smith, it's like you're starting to see that like more of it happen. And I think like when she pulls out, it's either the locket or the cup, maybe both, but like the red gleam also comes back then too. Yeah.
Yeah. It's back there. But now we are to like the best part, the big reveal where he writes his name in the air. Tom Marvolo Riddle waved his wand and it rewrites itself. I am Lord Voldemort. It's like, oh my God, the absolute chills. Every time I read this one, I'm like, it's right there. It is like so sneaky.
I know. But I think as you pointed out kind of cleverly early on, is I don't think that we ever get all three names lined up in order.
Like, we do not.
Like we've seen like Tom M. Riddle. We've heard his like grandfather's name referred to as Marvolo. I think we knew Riddle was like his father's last name. So like we're getting like all the piecemeal, but you're right. I mean, it's almost one of those things where it's like if you saw Tom Marvolo Riddle, it wouldn't be impossible to like even just like put your brain to the task of unscrambling it. Like
right.
It's almost like you can like feel the essence of I am Lord Voldemort, like attempting to like rip itself from those like letters.
Exactly. Like especially because the V-O-L in Marvolo, really, like if you see that with like, it's like Vol, then the D's are right there and the Riddle's like Vol. It's very close.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
But I will say the one thing that this has done for all of my theory writing forever since is I want to discover an anagram before the author tells me.
Yes.
Like more than anything.
Dude, I have spent, there are so many pages of my old notebooks that are covered in ridiculous anagram crazy person writing.
Yes.
Where I am like,
person with the red string and
it's
the
exactly
yarn,
yes. It's like it's something. It's gotta be. It's so close. Maybe. What about this way? You know, I've got like word unscramblers going. I'm trying as many combinations. Oh, it's like it's gotta maybe.
I know. It's like I desperately want it to happen. I want to figure it out.
I know.
On my own.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So one day it'll happen.
This particular trick though, the Tom Marvolo Riddle translates to I am Lord Voldemort. I think we've talked about this, like created all sorts of publishing problems because when they print the book in other languages, this trick still has to work.
Exactly.
So,
yep. Yeah. So that it's like a very big one where I think in one of them, like his middle name is, and maybe in the French one, his middle name is Elvis, which I always think it's like, okay, all right.
Tom Elvis Riddle.
Yep. So there's some really funny ones there, but they always end up working regardless of the translation. But that is like one of those details where it's like so infrequently is the spelling of anything, like even if an anagram is being used, a lot of time it's not like a visual plot point in the story,
right?
So you can maybe like fudge it like a different way, or maybe the reader needs to figure it out more as like additional reading, like a fun fact type or whatever. This is plot relevant, so it has to work.
Yes,
so
it has to work.
Then you have to go and find like what is something that is like acceptable to use in every other iteration,
right?
This is actually just a curiosity that I would have for any of our international readers out there is, do like, because I feel like I've spoken to a few different people who have done different things. Do you read the books in your like native language, or do you read them in English? Like, I mean, because assuming if you're listening to at least the show.
Yeah, you must speak English.
Right, yeah, or understand it. Yeah. So that would be like a curiosity. I just wonder if that's like a thing where it's more common to be like, no, I want to read it like as it was written,
yeah,
versus the translation. That's just a genuine curiosity. So anyway, but yeah, then as we move on, there's another line immediately after that I think is kind of fascinating where he says, "I am Lord Voldemort. It was a name I was already using at Hogwarts to my most intimate friends only." Intimate friends only, of course.
Friends.
I know that's exactly why I
put
that.
Quotes like, around it. Yeah.
It's like he doesn't have friends. He's incapable of having friends because he cannot love.
Yeah, no, so. Not real friends. He also says, in whose veins run the blood of Salazar Slytherin himself through my mother's side. It's like a weird detail to include there. Like if Harry's going to be like, wait a minute.
Which side?
Which side? Prove it. Through my mother's side. I got it. You want to see the chart? Here it is.
Yep. No, but that's another one, though, that I do think, again, leans on that thought that he's already visited the Gaunts.
Oh, yes. You're right.
Yeah.
So he's already figured. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. That's true. That does help.
I kept thinking as I was reading this chapter that the video we made last week trying to prove that point. I was like, I'm going to end up reading a sentence that like completely invalidates it.
Yeah.
And everything I read, I kept just being like, this helps.
I know there was one on the next page. It's like or a couple pages from now where it says probably the only two parcel mouths to come to Hogwarts since the great Slytherin himself. And I was like, oh man. But if he visited the Gaunts, he'd know that. They came to school, but then I was like, no. It's pretty clear almost those guys didn't come to school.
It seems very possible or likely,
but
yeah.
Doesn't mean they wouldn't know about the chamber.
True. Yep.
Because they had the locket.
I mean, it's probably the same thing where I'm sure they would, as Slytherin's descendants, would have a great sense of like ownership over Hogwarts, even if they themselves haven't attended it. Like they may even see their position as being so superior as being the descendants of a founder that like it places them in like a higher position than having been educated there.
Right.
Formally.
Yeah. Right.
It's like my dad invented Harvard. It's like, oh
yeah. Wow. Did you go there?
It's like,
no.
Could you get in?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, I didn't, but my dad invented it, so I'm better than you.
Right.
Except not dad, just great, 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 great grandfather.
So there.
Take that.
I'm going to go nail a snake to a door.
Exactly right.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big money on new windows now at Menards. Update your home with vinyl windows from Jeld-Wen. They're durable, energy efficient, and are low maintenance. Menards carries over 100 different size and style options in stock, ready to take home today. Save big on Jeld-Wen windows in store or view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more window deals happening this week now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So, let's see. This is okay. So next, Fox shows up because Harry just starts, yelling at him and tells him that, you know, Dumbledore's not gone as long as people are loyal to him. And then it says, I thought this was a weird order of things that happened. It says music was coming from somewhere, but then a few sentences later, it says, then as the music reached such a pitch that Harry felt it vibrating inside his own ribs, flames erupted at the top of the nearest pillar. So the flames erupting is like Fox arriving.
Yeah.
Right? Like, which to me is very similar to how like Dumbledore exits the castle in Order of the Phoenix, right? Like he grabs Fox, fire, flash, disappear.
Yep.
Right. So that is sort of the same effect we're going here. What's interesting to me is that prior to Fox's like fire flash into the chamber, the music is already there. Like the music is arriving at the destination before Fox is there.
I mean, to me, I think that makes sense though, because it seems like Phoenix Song is something that has like an eerie ability to like carry.
Yeah.
So it's like, I mean, assuming Fox is traveling some measure of distance in order to get here, which that's the other thing is, like, does Fox come through the same, like, Fox can't become, actually, this is occurring to me in real time, Fox can't be coming through the same entrance because that entrance is currently being blocked and only opened by Ron and Lockhart.
That's what I'm saying. He's not flying in like he does in the movie. He's like fire flash.
Oh, yes. I'm following your meaning.
Right.
Okay. I'm sorry. I was not understanding what you were saying before.
Yes.
Okay. That's a good point.
Right.
Yes.
So it's like the song is like arriving at his destination before he like teleports or whatever.
Ooh.
But that's weird, right?
That is weird.
But that's exactly what's happening.
It does seem like that is what's happening. But
yeah.
But you're, yeah, okay. So, okay, this is, now I'm like, there was a thought that I was tugging on, and I was asking you before we sat down to record, because it's like one of those things where I'm like, I know it's ridiculous. Like, so let me preface with that.
Okay.
But like, I mean, Dumbledore himself shares many qualities with a phoenix.
Yeah.
Like he definitely, like, I think there's a line in Goblet of Fire after Harry like returns from the maze or from the graveyard rather, where like Dumbledore picks him up with like surprising strength.
It does say that,
which is like very similar yep. to the Phoenix. He has like the ability to like exit Hogwarts ground, which can't be done in any other way, as far as we know, through like basic apparition.
But he's doing it via Fox.
He's doing it via Fox.
Yeah.
Right.
He has this whole line about how music is more powerful than any other magic or a magic beyond what we teach here.
Yep.
Which is like the Phoenix song.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then there's numerous circumstances throughout the story where when Dumbledore is feeling like a certain kind of intensity, Harry describes his eyes as almost having like flame or fire in them,
mm-hmm.
like a certain like flame like intensity.
Yeah.
So it's like, and then I think that Dumbledore's Patronus, I think we can know from Pottermore archives, is a phoenix. So
yes.
Like Dumbledore's relationship and pairing, and he's uniquely capable of owning one as a pet, which is otherwise just rather difficult to do.
Right.
So like there's a certain kind of like thinking in my mind where I'm like, is there some bizarre scenario where Dumbledore is an animagus and can become a phoenix?
Right.
And like, which, I mean, this would be the stretching to breaking point, even for me, part of the story, but it's like, is Fox arriving here or is it Dumbledore? Because as we'll see more as this chapter unfolds, Fox seems to be very, very uniquely equipped to handle this situation just so well.
Well, there's a weird line where like, he gives Harry the diary, and it's like Dumbledore doesn't even know about the diary at this point.
No, because because the way that Dumbledore will eventually learn about the Horcruxes is because Harry brings the diary
right.
to him.
How does Fox know to give Harry the diary?
How does Fox know to bring the sorting hat?
There's a bunch of weird stuff going on. But then in the next chapter, Dumbledore will say, like, you must have shown me true loyalty. Only that could have summoned Fox to you.
But it's, I mean, like, right, right.
Yeah.
So that's the thing, is that it's like, I guess the question is it better for...
Well, we have, this is, I mean, I'm trying, like, remembering other theories we've done. I think we have done theories that Godric was Fox's original owner
okay.
once upon a time, which would at least give him a connection to the sorting hat and knowledge of how it works and stuff. And we have a different theory that Dumbledore is also a descendant of Gryffindor.
I mean, we've certainly made the argument as valiantly yeah. as we're capable of doing
yes.
it.
But then, not to just like berate you guys with theories or anything, I think we made a video once that like in death Dumbledore's become phoenixes.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that is another one that we could add to the on top, as I'm pretty sure that like there's a moment that Harry alone witnesses after the White Tomb where something like erupts from the tomb itself, and Harry says like for a split second he thought he saw a phoenix and then it was gone.
Right.
It's like the phrasing that is used there, and it's like what is the deal? Because then in Fantastic Beasts, not to jump completely out of yeah. our zone here, and especially into a territory where like the canon is a little quaky at best, but it's sort of like this idea that like a phoenix will arrive to a Dumbledore in need.
Right.
Of course we know that there's like the oh my gosh, what is the Tycho Dodonis.
The poems of Tycho Dodonis.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Can we remember it?
Oh, let's see. Let's see. Arise, great Avenger with wings from the water is the end of it.
Right.
It's despair of the daughter. Avenge.
Return, great Avenger with wings from the water.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's like despair of the daughter. There's something, something. Despair of the daughter. Return, great Avenger with wings from the water.
Yes. Okay. So long story long, there's the bizarro baby swap that happens out at sea. Clearly one of the babies, you know, and like the return with wings from the water has always sort of like led us to believe that the phoenix that appears to Credence could potentially have been a former Dumbledore.
Right. But I think we've thought that because Corvus Lestrange is the baby that drowns.
I think so.
Right, because Leta switches the babies.
Yeah. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Right. So she saves.
So Credence is not Corvus Lestrange.
Right. Credence is not Corvus Lestrange because he's Aurelius Dumbledore, whatever. And Corvus Lestrange is the baby that actually goes down. So our thought is that because these two babies are like sort of connected from this event, that he becomes the phoenix that appears to Credence.
And that's why it's Return, Great Adventure with wings from the water.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
That's our thing. Boy, if you're following us, bravo, because we're like four theories deep right now.
I know. Yeah. It's just like layer on top of layer on top of layer.
And we'll never know the answer to this one.
It's fine. The point is that Dumbledore obviously has a very distinct and unique relationship with phoenixes that must go further than what we're ever told on page. And what Fox does in these next few pages is just unbelievable if Fox is just simply acting of his own accord.
Right. I mean, it's possible Fox is immensely... I'm thinking. Fox's tail feathers are what's in both Harry and Voldemort's wand.
True.
So is there... would Fox be able to detect Voldemort's soul in the diary or something? something. I don't think there's any precedent for that. I'm just like, I'm trying to make sense of how on earth Fox knows about the diary.
I know.
You know?
Because
he wouldn't even, would he have been around when, no, it's not even like, oh yeah, Fox could have seen Tom Riddle when he was at school. And it's like, I mean, I guess, but that's just guessing, which I know it's like, wait, you guys are not okay with that kind of guessing. You
know? I know. Okay. So
there's a difference between conjecture and theory.
Yeah. Right. People are like, I'm rolling their eyes so hard. Okay. So the other thought, okay, if we want to use the what was
that? That was Siri activating somehow. I don't know on my phone.
Okay, so the other theory that you could potentially go off of who want to use Fantastic Beasts canon is the idea that a phoenix will arrive to a Dumbledore in need.
Right.
Dumbledore himself could have the line wrong, because the other thing that we know is that, in a way, Dumbledore and Harry are both from Godric's Hollow, which, if we want to back up even further, we know that the Dumbledores actually live on like mold on the wall or something. They move to Godric's Hollow.
Yeah.
But they must have had some reason to go there. And it's like, this could be one of those things to pair it back to the idea that Godric Gryffindor was the original owner of Fox. It may be that like, it's not to a Dumbledore in need, but a Gryffindor in need. And in this particular case, both Harry and Dumbledore themselves could both be descendants of Gryffindor, which would make this battle Gryffindor versus Slytherin.
Which is what it's like clearly being set up for, but I think it is like known canon that Harry is not descended from Gryffindor.
It is known canon. It's like I'm arguing for the case that it should be.
Like that would make, it would be great, but I think it can still work, because it can be the case that Dumbledore is a descendant of Gryffindor, and that like when he sees like, and like over time, that's just been the name long enough that the legend arises that like a phoenix will appear to a Dumbledore in need. But what he means is a Gryffindor in need. But then why it still works for Harry is because even though he's not a bloodline of Gryffindor, being a Gryffindor in need means being a true Gryffindor,
which
Harry clearly is, because he can pull the sword.
I just got to. Because we know, because he pulls the sword, because he's a true Gryffindor.
Boom.
A Gryffindor in need. Dang it, that's so good.
Ah!
Oh, I love that.
Got it.
I love that.
Got it.
Phoenix will arrive to a Gryffindor need.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
That was a good one.
Well did.
Thank you.
Well did. Okay. Okay. I'm all for it. I'm all for it. Starting to feel like maybe Gryffindor's mascot should have been a phoenix.
Feels like maybe it could have, should have, would have been. Yeah. I mean, it is.
And then they're over there and everybody like, guys, Griffin is right there in the name. And then all the Ravenclaws are raising their hand.
Yeah,
they're like,
whoa,
Ravenclaw.
Whoa, Ravenclaw. They did us, but then also they did us dirty by not making it an eagle.
True.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, people will complain that they didn't make that it's not Raven and then complain that there are ravens on it.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which all, actually, I'm for all of those arguments.
we're pro eagle.
Yeah, we're pro eagle.
Yeah.
Bring back the bronze, as they say. Anyway, let's see. So Voldemort starts having some real just forgetful moments here. All of a sudden he starts revealing just like he's super powerful. He has some bad memory sometimes, is what I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, Harry reveals that, like, oh, my common muggle born mother died for me to save me. That's why it, you know, didn't work. And he's like, oh, so your mother died to save you. Yes. That's a powerful counter charm. And it's like, what do you mean? What do you mean? You mean you knew? You knew. You 16-year-old you knew about the sacrificial protection, and older you was just like, wing it. Like, dude, or like, how can people know about this if Harry is the only one to survive? Like, is there a different version of sacrificial protection where people are like dying to protect people from non-death? Like, does it protect against other things? I guess it does, but like, it seems like no one realizes it can protect against death.
Yeah, you know? I mean, you're right. Like, it's a type of thing where it's like, possibly in the moment, this is where Voldemort is so blinded by how close he is to seizing power.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably it.
When he goes to kill Harry, he basically thinks like, I have like friendship. Even Peter Pettigrew's betrayal of James and Lily is proof to him that love is not what people think it is. It's such a ruse. Like, you know, it's not like your own best friend betrayed you.
Right.
That's how I'm here right now. And I am here to win.
Right.
My way.
He's like, fate favors Lord Voldemort.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So it's like, I think he's just blinded by his proximity.
Yeah,
because if Harry loses, right, then Voldemort wins forever.
Certainly. Yeah. Yeah. I think you're absolutely right about that. Next we have, he summons the basilisk to come fight Fox. The basilisk, this is such a good inclusion, is that the basilisk emerges from Slytherin's mouth, the giant statue, which is just the dark mark,
you know,
effectively,
yep,
with the snake coming out of the skull. So also that's very clever.
Little nod to like Parseltongue as well.
Yeah, and Parseltongue. It's like, there's a lot happening and just that imagery. Very good, very good.
Yep.
He says Parseltongue won't happen, like won't help you now. It only listens to me. But I don't think that's true. I don't think that's true because of something that happens here. Let's see. What happens is Fox attacks the basilisk and Tom is just yelling at him. He says, leave the bird. The boy's behind you. You can still smell him. Kill him. And Harry is just like at a loss. He has no idea what he's going to do. He says, help me. Harry muttered wildly, someone, anyone. And then what happens is the snake's tail whipped across the floor again. Harry ducked. Something soft hit his face. The basilisk had swept the sorting hat into Harry's arms.
Oh.
It's like Harry says, help me. And the basilisk does. And it's like, you know,
I mean, yes, no, it's like, I get what you're saying. It's
yeah.
Like, I can hear the people saying like, it's a reach, but it's also like, it's not.
It's not a reach.
Like, it's like Fox is in there being like Dr. Convenience
exactly.
for Harry. And it's the basilisk that throws in the hat.
Right. It's like why would the basilisk help him? And it's like, cause Harry told him to. The basilisk has to listen to the heir of Slytherin, and Harry has a piece of the soul inside of him.
That's what Tom Riddle doesn't know, too.
Yeah, Tom Riddle doesn't know that.
Like, it won't listen to you, it'll only listen to its master, and Harry's like, joke's on you.
Joke's on you. I have at least the same amount of soul in me as you do in you.
Yes.
And I'm alive. If anything, I'm more in control here. Not that Harry realizes that, but I think when he says, help me, it says, Harry muttered wildly. I think he's speaking Parseltongue when he does this, and the the basilisk is like, okay, doesn't maybe make sense to the basilisk to help Harry kill the basilisk, but he does it.
Right, right. Well, that's the thing too. This is like one of those classic instances where it's like, I refuse to believe that the snake itself is just mean of its own accord.
This is also further proof then that if the basilisk throws it to him, it's further proof that Godric knew the basilisk, because the basilisk would know about the hat and the sword.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh man. Guys, it all keeps coming together. I'm not trying to force this, okay? It's just there.
It's just working. It just works.
So I never put that together until we were reading it like this. It's like, help me, help me. The basilisk whips him the hat. And I was like, oh my God, did he make that happen?
I know. It's so funny too, because I read that and then I like zoomed backwards and I like re-listened to it again. And I was just sort of like, huh. And like, I didn't even piece it together. But for whatever reason, I did listen to like this paragraph twice.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like,
something caught your attention. Wait a minute.
Deep inside my brain, my subconscious was like, you idiot.
Yeah.
See the writing.
Listen.
The writing's right there on the page.
Oh man.
But yep. So then we get the moment where Harry basically puts the hat on his head and something very hard and heavy landed on top of him, almost knocking him out, which is like one of those where it's like, it almost feels like
I have a prop from the movie and that sword couldn't knock you out.
Yeah, no, not so much. Yeah. Not so much. It's a little small. It's a little like a letter opener.
Dude, let me tell you what, when they remake the HBO show, the Sword of Gryffindor better be freaking massive.
Like way cooler.
I'm thinking like, you know, if you've seen Game of Thrones, when Ned Stark is like, bring me ice. That's what I'm thinking.
That's what you're thinking.
That's okay. What I'm thinking. I want an ice sword that would knock Harry out if it bumped him on the head from the length of fall from top of hat to head.
Little 12-year-old Harry wielding like a 7-foot sword.
It is so because that's what you need to kill a giant snake, man.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, you don't want some little pointy needle thing. You know,
there you go. Well, so anyway, but the sword does come to him. Harry basically like has a couple of moves where he's able to dodge the basilisk. And then basically it's kind of like remarkable phrasing. It just says the basilisk lunged again and this time its aim was true. So little me listening to Dad read this story is like, is Harry dead? Like, what do you mean its aim was true?
And like, we'll pick it up next week.
it hit him?
It hit him. He got it.
But no, so then the very next line, basically Harry slams the sword through the roof of the serpent's mouth, instantly killing it. However, unfortunately, one long poisonous fang was sinking deeper and deeper into his arm, and it splintered as the basilisk keeled over. So,
it's really a pretty short fight.
It is pretty, it's a pretty short fight.
He gets the sword and stabs it.
Right. Yeah. Yes. So it does come together rather quickly. And this is like one of those big questions as well, where people often ask like, well, why doesn't, if Harry is about to use the fang to destroy the diary, then how come the piece of Tom Riddle's soul inside of Harry isn't destroyed by the exact same methodology,
right,
which is basilisk fang venom hitting him? And it basically really comes down to Hermione's explanation of how Horcruxes work inside of their containers.
Yeah.
Which is to say that if you can destroy the container itself, then the piece of soul trapped inside will also be destroyed, which is the opposite of like a human person, where like if I were to run Jay through with the sword, which I of course would never do, but his soul would be fully intact, even though his body would be damaged in the process or ruined in the process.
Right.
And so the idea here is that if Harry had died, then Tom Riddle's soul inside of him would also have been destroyed.
Right. Yes. But he is in the process of the Horcrux inside him being destroyed, but Fox saves him.
Yes, yes. Another one of those things that Tom Riddle seems to have.
Forgetfulness.
Yes, yeah. He's basically like, you're dead, Harry Potter. Do you see what he's doing? He's crying. And it's like, that's the
you
moment
where...
You
said it out loud, bro.
Like, Tom needs like interrupt himself and be like, do you see what he's doing, Potter? He's crying. Oh, crap.
Yeah, and meanwhile, it takes him another 3/4 of a page. He's like, I'm going to sit here and watch you die. And it's like, dude, you're holding the wand. Just do it.
I know. Yeah. It seems like it. It seems like he could have done
it. Not even sure if that would have worked, but because I guess the sacrificial protection would still be active.
Probably so.
Right, so.
Yeah. So
wouldn't necessarily have worked, but.
right. Yeah. But either
maybe
way.
Maybe you stab him again or shoo the bird away.
He does shoo the bird away.
Yeah.
Like quite, yeah. Like
too late.
He says, get away, bird.
Get away, bird.
I said, get away from him.
He does. That's the line. Get away, bird.
Yep.
Oh, man. All right. There you go. So he suddenly remembers, of course, healing powers. I forgot. Convenient.
Way to go.
Wow. Or inconvenient if you're you. Let's see. Yeah. So then in a rush of wings, Fox had soared overhead and something fell into Harry's lap. The diary, which like Fox really doing a lot of work here.
Yeah. Fox is definitely figuring out more. Fox is figuring out more than like Harry.
Yeah.
I mean, even more than Dumbledore himself should know.
Yeah.
Like, even if Dumbledore were there to know to do anything. But this is another one of those moments where it's like, it kind of is fascinating to know, like, what must be happening inside of Harry that's so instinctual that, like, the diary lands on his lap and Harry just, like, knows what to do with it.
Right.
Like, you know, he grabs the basilisk fang, plunges it straight through the heart of the book, and it's over.
The basilisk venom had burned a sizzling hole right through it. More of the basilisk heat powers on display.
Ah, yes, yes. Yeah. That sweet, sweet laser vision.
Yeah, that laser vision and its heat tooth. I guess the venom could just have acid that's burning it or something.
That could
I
be
guess.
It. That could be it.
But you guys, I don't want to like get you too excited or anything, but let me just say, if you think we haven't been working on heat vision basilisk merch, you'd be wrong.
We are. We're working on it.
It's happening. Yeah.
Things coming.
We'll keep you posted.
Things coming to a web store near you.
It's glorious.
It is glorious. So, but basically at this point in time, you know, Harry is inside of the chamber. Ginny is immediately coming back to life, and pretty much immediately upon coming back to life, she just starts explaining everything that happened. She does say, I couldn't say it in front of Percy. It was me, Harry. And I'm like, you probably could have said this in front of Percy.
You probably could have.
You probably should have said
maybe
this.
Maybe you should have even gone to him before Harry. You know?
Yeah. I mean, he is a prefect.
He is a prefect.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Ginny,
I don't know how you could have forgotten that.
Ginny does say, I'm going to be expelled.
I know. I was like, obvious concern. Right. Obvious concern of every Hogwarts student. I'm expelled.
I truly mean, I've brought it up a million times, so I'm sorry for constantly coming back to the same thing, but it is one of those things that always goes back to, like, the idea of being removed from Hogwarts, especially for Harry, is just such worst case scenario when it means life at the Dursleys.
Yeah.
And his, like, position at the school and this idea of expulsion for at least the first two books is on proud display.
Yeah.
It's constantly. And absolutely. I feel like after Chamber, it might go away.
Does it? Well, I guess we'll find out soon.
Yeah.
It is like, I guess there is a certain amount of it. Like, if you're in the wizarding world, if you are expelled from Hogwarts or whatever school you're at, it almost puts this like outcast status on you because it is going to be so much harder for you to like become like a fully trained wizard.
Yes.
You know, like you will be like in a magical community where you are really bad at magic because you did not get educated.
Right.
So like the threat of being expelled is like tremendous.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it does. Yeah. It seems like it'd be very, very difficult. You'd have a huge uphill battle up against you.
Mm-hmm.
But so then from there, they make their way back to the dark tunnel where they hear the sound of shifting rock, where Ron has successfully been able to basically just create a small enough hole for all of them to crawl through, which again means that Fox did not come through this particular entrance.
Exactly. Because the fire flashes in.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yes. How come you've got a sword?
Right. Yes. Ron also asked, where did that bird come from?
Yeah. So Ron didn't see it go in.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Yep. Yep. We're just.
Which means the song arrived before Fox.
Right. Somehow.
Which is crazy. Somehow. How does that work?
I don't know.
I'm so curious. Anyway, the Lockhart, it's revealed, has just completely blasted his own memory away, which is just hilarious here. And then they're like, how are we going to get out of here? And it turns out Fox has yet another answer for them because he's just the greatest ex machina ever.
Yeah. he's just capable of...
Just capable of every problem we were going to run into.
You know, and it's kind of one of those things. I actually drew a picture on my very last page of the tunnel going from the girls' bathroom down to the Chamber of Secrets.
Yeah.
And I've got Fox and Harry with a sword and Gilderoy Lockhart with a little question mark next to his head.
Very good.
There is the question where it says... Harry bent down and looked up the long dark pipe. How do you think we're going to get back up this? He said, this is like one of those things where it's almost like, was the basilisk at all included in Slytherin's plan for the Chamber of Secrets so that like as a mechanism for leaving? Like a
oh, like how was Slytherin himself getting out?
Yes.
Right.
Like just like transport.
I don't know. Maybe he could fly like Voldemort.
Maybe he could fly like Voldemort.
Yeah.
You know, but it's like you got the really big long tube that comes down, but like surely there's another way to
get out.
To get out.
Yeah. It's like there's a door right over there.
Right. You know? Yeah. Maybe if you ask the guy who designed the space, he's like, Guys. I interior design.
How do you think I got out? Come on.
Right.
Or was he just riding the basilisk up?
I don't know.
Maybe he was.
Yeah.
But okay, so there's like interesting just like splitting hairsness here. It says because Dumbledore tells him that Fox is capable of carrying tremendously heavy loads, but when they grab onto his tail feathers, it says an extraordinary lightness seemed to spread through his whole body, and the next second, in a rush of wings, they were flying. So it's not to me that Fox can lift heavy things. He can just magically make things light.
Yes, I right? know. It's a bizarre distinction.
Yes.
For sure, because it's like it's a very like extending kind of magic,
yeah,
which is kind of unusual. So I highlighted that exact same line because I was like, that is pretty interesting, and
yeah,
how this actually works,
right? So that is good. It's not just that Fox has like massive super muscle wings,
right
or anything. Yep.
But so they do make it back to the girls' bathroom, where Myrtle is extremely disappointed and says that you'd have been welcome to share my toilet.
I know. But what I do like is that Ron says, Harry, I think Myrtle's grown fond of you. You've got competition, Ginny, which to me is sort of like Ron being like, he's kind of already okay with it.
He's kind of, yeah, there you go.
There you go. Yeah, there you go, Ginny. You're trying to win over Harry, right? Ha ha, you've got competition. It's like, but you're okay with it? Cool. Harry, maybe you could have remembered this a little earlier.
Seriously, man, you could have had more time with Ginny before you went and risked your life and everything. It could have been great.
Could have been great.
But anyway, they make it back into the castle where Fox leads them down the corridor to Professor McGonagall's office. They knock on the door and push it open. And that closes out Chapter 17, Chamber of Secrets. And now we look forward to Chapter 18, Dobby's Reward.
Which is the last chapter.
We're
going to finish Chamber of Secrets next week.
I know. It's so exciting.
Which means we are super close to Through the Griffin Tour.
I know.
Yes.
Just right around the corner. We are going to actually, so after Chapter 18, we're going to have a couple of like recap episodes, and it will basically leave us for Through the Griffin Tour, to where we will start in Boston with Chapter 1.
Yes.
Which is going to be
For
Prisoner of Azkaban.
Yeah.
I am so excited.
I know.
It's going to be so much fun.
Going to be very fun to be kicking off Book 3 on tour with you guys in person. Just in case you're wondering, tickets for DC sold out. So can't wait to see you, DC.
Yes.
But in the meantime, also we are limited, like low ticket availability for Boston, New York, and Philly. So if you are interested in coming, like act fast because like there are not many tickets left.
Yeah, if you've been on the fence, there is a possibility of selling out between now and showtime. So
yes,
be sure to go and check it out. Link in all the show notes and all the places down below.
Yes. So that's going to be it's going to be so much fun.
Yes.
Anyway, I've got a review for us, Ben.
Lay it on me.
From B. Foxman. It says, having read and listened to the series multiple times, it's fun to really take a deeper look at the story. I enjoyed the funny insights into certain details of the story, like the basilisk somehow having heat vision, which obviously it does.
Nice.
Yes. Yeah. Guess why I picked this one. I honestly never noticed Chamber of Secrets as a whodunit style mystery, but wanted to go back and look for the subtle clues scattered throughout. Excited to see where the series goes as the books become more complex with character development and story elements. Here's a thought. What were Barty Crouch's Jr.'s career ambitions? He was clearly smart and driven to earn 12 OWLs and was able to perfectly mimic an Auror when he posed as Mad-Eye Moody. What would he be doing if he hadn't become a Death Eater?
Man, that's a really good question. I mean, this is like one of those where it's like when you're ranking Harry's Defense Against the Dark Arts professor, it's like you probably put Lupin at the top. There's the potential to put Snape in there for teaching Harry Expelliarmus, even if it doesn't happen while he's,
But
Mad-Eye Barty Crouch Jr. is a pretty darn good teacher.
Oh, like maybe he could have been a teacher?
Like he could have been. He seems to have a rapport with the school, with the students. I mean, he even like takes Neville under his wing at one point in time.
You're right.
He's doing it you know, in the name of giving him information that Harry was supposed to be able to use, but like,
yeah, which doesn't work, but
which doesn't work. But I mean, he was still able to recognize that Neville could use,
they still learn a lot,
right? Yeah, they do learn a lot. And so like, and I sort of like his like sort of, kind of like unfiltered, no nonsense methodology to like, you know, this is what you're up against. Like, you know, we may or may not be living in dark times. Like, you know, you guys need to learn. Like,
yeah.
I mean, it's not terribly dissimilar from like Harry's approach in the DA.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's a very gruff interpretation of it, obviously.
Yes, yeah. But, yeah, so that's good. I think I like the idea of him being a professor. I also think like this says he was clearly smart and driven to earn 12 OWLs. I doubt that. I think he's definitely very smart, but I would bet that he's like forced to take 12 OWLs by his dad.
You think it's like a little bit of like parental pressure?
Yes.
Kind of breathing
like
out.
Oh no, you're taking all the classes, son.
Yeah, I mean, Barty Crouch Senior definitely seems like he'd be a tough dad to have.
He does.
In the education department. I mean, I think he speaks like over 150 languages. He's impressive in every single regard. It seemed like he would have been a shoo-in for Minister for Magic if not for you know, basically what happens to his son, which kind of throws him off track. I mean, he even seems to carry a huge intensity. Like Barty Crouch has sort of got like a unrelenting like approach to chasing down Death Eaters. So you're right. I do think that there's a good possibility that was Barty Crouch Senior sort of like putting that on Junior, which also could be the reason that Barty Crouch Junior in some way, shape or form was like, sort of like, I don't really want to walk to the beat of your drum.
Right.
Dad.
Like this could be like part of like the underlying story about like why he resents his dad and like goes to the dark side. It's just like, I am so sick of this.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, not to excuse any of his behaviors or anything like
oh,
that.
Oh no, as not
a
at all.
Terribly
but I'm
dark
just,
wizard. But,
yeah.
But you know, it is like one of those things where I could see a world where that could be kind of folded into it there. I'm trying to think of like what else would sort of make sense. I mean, you know, he's teaching Defense Against the Dark Arts. He's clearly got some abilities in that field.
I know. And it's like, you're right. His dad is very anti-dark wizard. So,
right.
Like, so, I mean, he probably would have been a good auror himself.
Probably so. Yeah. I mean, that stands to reason. So that would be like where my head would go. Cause it also seems like to become an auror, you have to have exceptionally good grades in the first place.
Well, he's the one who suggests to Harry to become an auror.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Yeah. And I think at one point in time, Harry's like, of course it was an imposter, but yeah, you know, like it always sort of stuck
still,
with me.
Yeah, that's such a weird one.
I know it is. It's so funny. So great question. Great review. Thank you so much as always. If you too would like to hear your review in a future episode, be sure to go and drop one somewhere. It means a lot to us as the host of the show and also helps with some discoverability and helps the show kind of continue forward. So be sure to do that.
Yes, absolutely does. Look forward to reading them, but I think that's going to do it for us today here on Through the Gryffindor. Make sure you join us next time for Chapter 18, Dobby's Reward on Through the Gryffindor.
Today's episode was edited by Ethan Edgehill. Vaishon Brandon does our art. Catherine Stein is our production manager, and the show is hosted by me and Jonathan Carlin.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.